From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Calling it as it is, you're with Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, thank you for being here with me. It's wonderful to be live with you on this lovely Friday here at today's News Talk, TNT Radio. TNTRadio.live is the website. That is where you find all the episodes. So if you missed anything, you're definitely going to want to go there. You can also access them in our app. Our mobile app is fantastic. Now, normally I'd probably go through some headlines with you right now, but I tell you what, my colleagues here are doing such a good job with this today. I thought maybe we'd do something a little bit different. And I'm going to focus on a document called Weapons of Mass Migration, Forced Displacement as an Instrument of Coercion. This is a very interesting document, and I hope that you will go and find it and read it in its entirety. It's by Kelly Greenhill. You can find it at Army U Press, Naval Postgraduate School's website, and their Dudley Knox Library, various other places, various other military institutions. It's a open document. You know, you just search Weapons of Mass Migration PDF and you bring it up. Here's how it starts. Coercion is generally understood to refer to the practice of inducing or preventing changes in political behavior through the use of threats, intimidation, or other forms of pressure, most commonly military force. This article focuses on a very particular non-military method of applying coercive pressure: the use of migration and refugee crises as instruments of persuasion. Conventional wisdom suggests this kind of coercion is rare at best. Traditional international relations theory avers that it should rarely succeed. In fact, given the asymmetry in capabilities that tends to exist between would-be coercers and their generally more powerful targets, it should rarely even be attempted. However, as this article demonstrates, not only is this kind of coercion attempted far more frequently than the accepted wisdom would suggest, but that it also tends to succeed far more often than capabilities-based theories would predict. Now, I'm going to scroll down to the defining, measuring, and identifying coercive engineered migration section here. Coercive engineered migration, or coercion-driven migrations, are those cross-border population movements that are deliberately created or manipulated in order to induce political, military, and/or economic concessions from a target state or states. The instruments employed to effect this kind of coercion are myriad and diverse. They run the gamut from compulsory to permissive, from the employment of hostile threats and the use of military force, as were used during the 1967 to 1970 Biafran and 1992 to 1995 Bosnian civil wars, through the offer of positive inducements and provision of financial incentives, as were offered to the North Vietnamese by the United States in 1954 and 55 following the first Indochina War, to the straightforward opening of normally sealed borders, as was done by President Honecker of East Germany in the early coercive engineered coercive engineered migration is frequently but not always undertaken in the context of population outflows strategically generated for other reasons. In fact, it represents one subset of a broader class of events that they all rely on: the creation and exploitation of such crises as means to political and military ends. A phenomena I call strategic engineered migration. Coercive engineered migration is often embedded within mass migration, strategically engineered for dispossessive, exportive, or militarized reasons. It is likely, at least in part, as a consequence of its embedded and often camouflaged nature, that its prevalence has also been generally unrecognized and its significance underappreciated. Indeed, yeah. Well, we're starting to appreciate it now here, aren't we? For instance, it is widely known that in 1972, Idi Amin expelled most Asians from Uganda in what has been commonly interpreted as a naked attempt at economic asset expropriation. I could go on and on with this very, very interesting document. Again, you can find it all over the place. Dudley Knox Library, Army U Press, all over the place. So you should read that. I definitely recommend that you give that one a read. And I'll remind you also, at TNT Radio, we never go home, and we're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We got you covered right here on TNT Radio.
The news and talk you need.
It's more than just opinions. It's facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes. So much going on. My goodness. A lot of this topic, I can't get over this topic, this headline that dropped this week about the Biden administration being all set to build some wall out here in, where is that? Star County, Texas, I think, right here in the beautiful state of Texas. Very interesting. My take on it is I think it's campaigning. I think that is a little bit of, a little bit of campaign process by the Democrat National Party there, or either that or it benefits Mayorkas and the whatever shady operations are happening in that area, or it's a land grab. I don't know. We've seen McCarthy pulled from the seat this week. All kind of crazy stuff going on. A lot of it, I believe, related to the 2024 presidential race. And here to discuss all this with me, the host of Ringside Politics, Jeff Krueller. Jeff, welcome to TNT Radio. How you doing?
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I got you great. Sounds really good.
Let me just give you a little pronunciation guide. It's crew air, like crew in a boat and air you breathe. Crew air.
All right. Crew air. I'm putting that in my notes so I don't screw that next time. So what do you think about what's gone on this week? I mean, do you agree with me? Is some of this related to posturing for the big 2024 events we're coming up on?
I think a few different things. One, we've got, Joe Biden, who promised that he would never build one inch of wall. now building 20 miles. It's so bad that he's got to do something. And I think that he claims that it doesn't work, but he's forced to do it. Now, Brian, you know that Joe Biden disregards Supreme Court rulings all the time. He disregards Congress. He does what he wants. Yeah. He's a lawless president. So the fact that he would supposedly be forced to do this by Congress is ridiculous. And I think he's doing it because it's so bad that they have to do something. And this makes them, so for their left-wing fanatics, they can say, well, we were forced to do it. And for the people they're trying to court in the middle, they can say, hey, look, when it got bad, we built some wall. And, you know, either way, it's a disaster. It's a disaster.
Oh, it's a total disaster. And I'm so black-pilled on it, Jeff. It's just like after being here in Texas and seeing tens or hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent on Abbott's Operation Lone Star. And it's just felt like a complete PR event the whole time to me. I mean, maybe his hands are tied. I understand we're not really getting our state's rights when it comes to our borders, but my goodness, it just feels like, and you know, you're right to point out like it's gotten so bad. You know, even Democrats are noticing now that, hey, wait a minute. You mean we too are getting carjacked and assaulted and, you know, murders and rapes and all these things that are happening and, you know, running out of places to put our veterans. Like that is getting noticed by a lot of people. So I think you're onto something there with it. And that's why I call it kind of campaigning, because they're kind of, you know, telling that group of people, the center left and, you know, out from there, hey, we're working on it. We realize there's a problem now.
Right. Yeah. We're doing something. Here's what we're doing. So Trump built about 500 miles of wall, and now they're going to build 20, maybe. And I think it's just a Band-Aid. I mean, they can still get around. I think Arizona is pretty much wide open, other parts of Texas.
Yeah, so, Tucson, Eagle Pass are a mess.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a disaster on our hands. And I would like to know, I've gotten all kinds of different estimates as to how many have come in here illegally. I mean, I've heard anywhere from 8 to 15 million. So even at the low number, 8, that's double the size of my state of Louisiana. We have about 4 million people. So that's double our population.
Yeah. And it's like out here in Eagle Pass this last week, or no, last month, in the month of September, it was almost a 250,000 people in 1 month. It was a record-breaking month. And I know that Art Del Cueto has been really, he's been really good at tracking what's gone on in the Tucson sector. And the Tucson sector is like, no one really talks about that one. Like, there's a lot of attention on Texas, but we have 1,000 miles of border here in Texas. So it's like, oh, you're going to put 20 miles up? Okay. You do the math.
Yeah, it's just it's ridiculous. But, you know, it's I've always said, I think, Brian, it's our number one problem that we have. I mean, we can't really have a country if we don't have borders. Yeah. As President Trump has said, even banana republics, third world nations, they have some sort of border control. I mean, we're the only nation on the globe that seems to allow anyone who wants to come in here access to our country. And then we reward them once they come here illegally. And then we don't kick them out. We don't deport them. So, no. I mean, it's insane. And then how many of these people that have gotten away are terrorists or agents of the Chinese government or in some way Mexican drug cartel members? Or we don't know.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's 162 countries with millions of people, approaching tens of millions of people. If the Democrats win again in 2024 and these policies aren't reversed. We don't have to write any new laws. We already have all the laws we need to make this work. So it's policies, right, coming from DHS that need to be reversed. And even then, but if that doesn't happen in 2024, what, by 2028, we're going to have what, 20 million, 30 million from 162 countries? I mean, that, is there a little bit of a national security threat there?
There's a national security threat. You're right on target. There's an economic threat. There's a health threat. There's a threat to our country in so many different ways, from language to culture. I mean, it's hard to assimilate that many people in such a short period of time. I mean, personally, I'd like to see us shut down everything for a while to allow the country to assimilate who we have here and absorb the massive increase in population we've had before allowing millions more in. And that's why I'm praying that we can have a change in administration in January 25, because we can't continue like this another 4 years.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. And I was just, as I came into the show, I was reading from a document that I think is really important. It can be found at the Naval Postgraduate School Dudley Knox Library or Army U Press. It's a public document. It's from 2010 by Kelly Greenhill. And it's called Weapons of Mass Migration, Forced Displacement as an Instrument of Coercion, Strategic Insights, Volume 1. And it outlines exactly how these sort of policies have been used in war, you know, used in Vietnam, used in the Bosnian civil wars, used it all over the place. And it's a pretty long and extensive document. And when I see, you know, just look at what's going on, I can't help but say, hey, wait a minute. This is what I'm seeing is exactly what they're talking about in this document. Who is allowing this? Who's doing this? Why is this happening?
Yeah, I think it's, right on target. I mean, I'm going to have to check out that. What year was that written?
It's a 2010. Weapons of Mass Migration.
Wow. Just imagine how much worse it's gotten in 13 years. I mean, yeah, I don't even know if there can be any imagination back then as to how bad the situation has gotten today. And I see the link that you sent me, so I will check that out. But I mean, the numbers we're talking about are so astronomical. I mean, above anything that we've ever seen here. And I really think it's probably above anything any other country is experiencing.
Oh yeah, it's got to be record breaking. I mean, I don't know. My history is B minus level, so I don't know the answer to that. But it sure seems pretty magnanimous to me. I mean, even if we were to start enforcing the border laws today, and start trying to deport these people, you know, we're looking at approaching 10 million. We don't have the processing power to even find any of these people.
Right. You're exactly right. Now, if we start shutting off the incentives, shutting off the benefits, cracking down on employers hiring illegals, then maybe some of these folks will self-deport, will on their own go back home. Hopefully that'll happen because, I mean, these folks are taking jobs away from Americans. They're a strain on our economy. I mean, they're taking benefits, they're taking housing. Look at the mayor of New York. I mean, this was a guy who was all for being a sanctuary city. Now he's so concerned, he flies down to Mexico City to learn more. Maybe he should start blaming the president of his party and the policies of Joe Biden. That's the real cause of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, and Mayorkas's comments, oh, my gosh, about the wall. We're just like, what? I mean, are those comments meant for people who did not watch the Judiciary Committee hearing with him? I mean, it's so much contradiction, gaslighting, skullduggery. I mean, I could go on and on. It's just absolutely amazing. But Jeff. Ringside Politics, that's the show. I got to let you go, but Jeff Cruer, did I do it right that time?
Brian, you got an A+, my friend, A+.
All right. Sorry for butchering it on the way in. I'll get it right on the way out, and I'll get it next time because I'm going to have you back on the show, Jeff. This has been a fun conversation. I really want to appreciate it. Anywhere else you want to shout out where people can find your work?
Yeah, I would just encourage people to check out my last name, Cruer.net, Cruer.net. I have a new video I posted there, and I'm doing a web poll asking people to vote on who they think the Democratic 2024 presidential nominee is going to be. My contention is it's not going to be Joe Biden.
All right. Yeah, they certainly are looking like they're getting ready to throw him under the bus, aren't they?
Right. Or overboard, whatever. Right.
Yeah. All the better. Concrete socks. All right. Just joking. I would never suggest such a thing. All right. Jeff Cruer, thank you for joining me here on the Brian McClain Show at today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You should hear what Katie Hopkins is talking about.
In the next election, the government will be raising a huge extra sum. So another £3,500 per household, more than what we were already paid in 2019. The amount of tax we pay is staggering. Income tax, national insurance, VAT. We pay customs and excise. We pay council tax, congestion charges, ULEZ, I mean, if you pay it, obviously. We pay on-road parking, road tax, car purchase tax, airline tax at 75%, green taxes at 16%, death duties, sugar taxes, import and export duties, house stamp duty. It's not until someone, darling, you know, lists those out like that, because it has reached a point, hasn't it? I read someone saying they won't stop until we're running around pot-bellied and shoeless. And it's true. I mean, it's wild.
Katie Hopkins on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Radio works because of its ability to personalize to the listener.
What's exciting these days is that people are rediscovering it. You know, people are really rediscovering just how powerful radio is, how ubiquitous it is. It's in our cars, it's in our homes. There are so many new ways to access it. It's everywhere.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Life without liberty is like a body without spirit. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Well, now that I've been very critical of Fox today on air, I'm going to read to you from Fox. I want to look at this, their top story right now. Lawyer claims New York teen charged in poet slaying is great kid who wasn't looking for trouble. I mean, have you seen the video? Have you seen the video of this? The fact that Fox even puts a picture of this Brian Dowling next to the victim, and they show the perpetrator here, Brian Dowling, like sobbing. I mean, what's the messaging here? What is the messaging here, Fox? Or are you just pulling that? Is that just from Getty? Is that the best one you could get from Getty? Why not a still shot of him stabbing this guy and then spitting in that guy's girlfriend's face? Why not that? I just, Fox, you're such a disappointment. uber disappointment. I can't believe you're going to frame this way. I can't even go any further. I just can't do it. It's too egregious. So, we're going to be rejoined here on the Brian McClain Show by Jennifer Lawrence from America Mission. And Jennifer, let's talk about this unreleased J6 footage. What has happened here? I saw some footage of someone. It looked like they were in the frame with maybe like a Ray Epps or a Ray Epps type character, and getting pulled in on the police side and saying, "Hey, I'm a cop." This new part of the, so, some new footage came out. What have you seen, and what's your take?
Yeah. Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me. There's so much going on with this J6 footage. Originally, when McCarthy became speaker, one of the stipulations of him becoming speaker was the fact that he was going to release all of the J6 footage in its entirety. Tucker Carlson and a few other reporters have been able to go into the skiff at the Capitol and view the footage, but they're not able to take it away. They're not able to put it out. They're not able to show what really went on that day. And that footage, those thousands upon thousands upon thousands of hours of footage, really hold the secret to what happened that day. And it really holds a lot of people's freedom in the mix, because a lot of those people would be exonerated that are sitting in prison in these horrible conditions if Congress would release that footage. But because what it shows is that there are a group of Republicans and Democrats who work together to go against people's constitutional rights and to overthrow President Trump from a duly elected election that happened in November of 2020.
Yeah. And it's like, this stuff is never allowed into the evidence, as far as I can tell from, my research on what's gone on in the courtroom. Just like something like that happening in a crowd of people, and they're still arresting people too. They're still going after more people. They say they're just going to keep, turning out that unconstitutional sausage. They're going to keep pulling the crank and just arrest more people as stuff like this gets reintroduced into the public slowly. I mean, there was enough introduced into the public from the get-go for people like us that knew what to look for. But I mean, we're at a point now where it's just like really in our faces. So what is, talk to me a little bit about how what's Matt Gaetz's role in all this? Because I know he's, I saw him back when McCarthy was elected, and he laid out like our friend Trash on Twitter really encapsulated some of the things that Gaetz said there, and a lot of it made a lot of good sense to me. So this is one of those stipulations that we don't hear about in the mainstream media. They just don't want, even on, I was just ripping on Fox, they don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah, it's really shocking, because at first Matt Gaetz was on a Twitter space and he was kind of saying like, we can't really release all the footage in its entirety. And then he went down to the prison and saw what was really going on, and saw these families that are outside trying to get people who rightfully should not be there out of there. And that is when he really started going after McCarthy, which culminated in the vote this week to get oust McCarthy, and rightfully so. And he didn't follow through on any of his promises. And the problem is what we found out once that the guy like crazily swung that hammer the other day in Congress, once McCarthy was voted out, he immediately kicked Nancy Pelosi out of McCarthy's office. So for the past 10 months, Kevin McCarthy and Nancy Pelosi have been sharing an office at the Capitol. So that means all of the business that was going through, Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy were sharing an office. And when Kevin McCarthy gave his speech after he was ousted, he was almost crying. Oh, Nancy would have saved me. Nancy would have saved me. Well, the thing about it was, we found out later that Nancy and Kevin had cut a deal that they weren't going to release the January footage. They had they were never going to hold up their end of the bargain. And if he didn't do that, Nancy Pelosi would make sure the Democrats were going to vote to save McCarthy. However, they did not vote to save McCarthy the other day, and yeah, he was ousted. So, I mean, that's what happens when you cut a deal with the devil, I suppose.
Yeah. So give me a little bit of clarification on this, because the way that it's been presented so far, it feels like we're talking about Nancy's special hide. There's like a hideaway, I guess, you can have if you're in one of these positions, or I don't know, if you draw enough Baphomets on the wall in the, I don't know, I'll stop right there. But so this is where Kevin McCarthy has been, they've been sharing the office. I mean, this is news to me. You're going to have help this make more sense to me.
Yeah. So what we found is when, like I said, once that guy slammed the gavel, his first order of business was to oust Nancy Pelosi out of her office and told her that she had something like 24 hours or 48 hours until the entire office would be rekeyed. And she needed, and then later on that night, you saw them moving boxes and moving office furniture out of the office. So all this time, I guess Kevin and Nancy were like doing the business of the country in the same office. And I really don't know how that works for party politics, except prove that there's obviously a uniparty sharing office in the Congress that, you know, they work together against the American people. Come to find out.
Yeah, of course, of course. And if you just kind of just take a step back and leave all the personalities aside, and you look at the way the Democrats voted and the way the Republicans voted, it's just like, wait a minute, what is happening here? So like 190 Republicans are going to agree with the Democrats on this, and we've got eight people, a mere eight, a 15 to like say, hey, we'll bring it up, but only eight to say, yeah, remember all those deals we made, you know, and then we're told it's chaos. Let me ask you about that on the other side of a brief headline here, but this whole idea of, oh, chaos, and oh, we need, you know, we need to have bipartisan agreement, all this stuff, like, I this is ridiculous, because we're living in chaos out here, chaos in our banks, chaos in our schools, chaos in our skies, chaos in our food. It's disgusting. We'll be bringing in a headline right now with today's news talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Hi, everybody.
So many crazy news stories going on right now.
Now, the news. Go.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Employers in the United States expanded their payrolls by 336,000 workers in September, as reported by the Department of Labor on Friday. The unemployment rate held steady at 3.8%. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has agreed to deals with Belgium, Bulgaria, and Serbia about increasing intelligence sharing and cooperation to combat people trafficking and organized illegal immigration.
Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out, helping you make a difference on TNT Radio.
Jennifer Lawrence from America Mission is my guest. Jennifer, what do you think about this? I think maybe we could use a little chaos up there on Capitol Hill. At the very least, it's slightly entertaining and subtly red-pilling more and more of the public every day.
Yeah, and I mean, what was really sad is you even had like people like Lauren Boebert, right, come out and vote for McCarthy. And it's like, what do you guys think is going to happen, right? Like, yeah. Oh, now you get money to your campaign and to your super PAC. Like, oh, you make sure you got that money if Kevin gets to keep his job. And meanwhile, you have the American people saying, no, get Kevin out of there. Like, he's obviously not working for us. Like, we don't want him there. And then you have people like Chip Roy, who goes on and does an interview where he calls us MAGA effers and literally is going after MAGA. So us at American Mission have been nicely trolling him for the past couple of days. He apparently gets real mad if you call him a rhino. He specifically said he was tired of the MAGA effers calling him a rhino. So we've been putting pink rhinos all over his Twitter page and memes. So feel free to join in the fun.
Nice. All right. Yeah, that is good fun right there. I always love trolling with America Mission. It is a great time. You should definitely follow them. Follow Dustin and Jennifer over there on Twitter X. Now, one of the other asks, it's my understanding from Matt Gaetz and others, was enough with the multi-thousand page massive omnibus bills and inadequate time to review them. Maybe I have a couple here. placing specific people on committees in leadership roles and in control of finances. You know, he wanted some accountability with regards to personnel appointments, the size of bills, stopping omnibus bills. What else was it? The one member motion, which is sort of being argued about now in the wake of all this. But I mean, they did it. They did it. So there's, you know, he has a number of points, and it's like, you know, as so, and he even talks about his constituents. He actually says my constituents. That's a word I don't hear from very many politicians anymore. So I don't know. I was on the fence a little bit at first, but the more I learn about it, the more I think about it, the more I read and watch, I'm glad that there's a chaos caucus, if they want to call it that. It seems to me like it's just actual politics at effect.
Yeah, they're actually doing their job of being held accountable. Well, so many times these people aren't held to account, and now they are. And the billions of dollars that is going to Ukraine. Kevin McCarthy was the one wearing the Ukrainian pocket square with the Ukrainian flag lapel on the floor of our Congress, right? Yeah. And making sure Zelensky has his money. And then come to find out, McCarthy, when the debt ceiling stuff was happening last week, McCarthy went and cut a deal with the Biden administration to make sure that the Ukraine would still be funded even if the government shuts down. What is up with the Ukraine? what's going on there? How did we get to this point? And why do I feel like we're paying off debt to them? And I don't think it's debt like we spent their money. I think it's debt like we owe them something.
Well, we found out this week that his wife, the little green man's wife, Olena, she likes million-dollar jewelry shopping days. So she's down for a little bit of million-dollar, you know, diamonds. I don't know what her flavor is. Gold, white gold. I don't know. I guess I would have to refer back to Vanity Fair magazine, who flew to the war zone to do a piece on Olena. But yeah, she got someone fired, I think, you know, being hoity-toity. And they took to the media with it. And now it's out there that Zelensky's wife's out there doing million-dollar jewelry shopping. I mean, must be nice.
Right. Must be nice. Especially coming, I guess, like, at least we get the tax revenue back, I suppose.
Unless it comes.
It went full circle. The money went all the way to Ukraine and then all the way back to the United States. Look at that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. So Ukraine was a big issue there. All these things. It's like McCarthy seems to have failed on all of these things. But here's the big question in our last few minutes. What about those other 190 some odd people that voted to keep him? Like, what does that say about our need to watchdog our government?
Yeah, I mean, they even took it a step further today. I think 40 to 45 of them all signed a strongly worded letter condemning Matt Gaetz for ousting McCarthy. They're obviously pretty pissed. So, I mean, like, I think this is going to be a big thing. And I think part of moving forward is making sure that there's no retaliation against Matt Gaetz or any of the other seven people who voted to oust McCarthy.
Well, that's the big concern, right? I mean, that's what this system seems to do when people try to shake it up on the inside. They get gone after. So are we going to see sexual assault claims showing up in the WAPO against
Matt
or something like that? I mean, something like that. It's just nuts. And oh, hey.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, no, I was just going to say that immediately right after the vote the other day, they were starting to gather votes to get Matt Gaetz ousted out of Congress. So they really didn't waste any time on that.
Okay. See, I just intuited that one. I didn't even know that. That's of course, that's what happened. All right. In our last couple of minutes here, I have to ask you, you know, of course, because of you and Dustin's experience with We Build the Wall and, you know, knowing what happened to you guys, which we've talked about on the program before, and what happened to some of the people you were working with, like Brian Koflager, hope I pronounced his last name right. How did it feel this week to see Joe Biden and the administration say, you know what, we've got this pesky 20 miles wall we have to build. So it's not going to help anything, but we're just going to go do that, even if we have to do eminent domain seizures and buy your land and steal a wildlife refuge and break 27 regulations and laws.
Yeah, it's horribly aggravating. Horribly aggravating. It makes me very angry, especially when they're calling to build emergency border wall. And 2 months ago, Joe Biden went and sold off all the excess border material supplies that were on the border waiting to be built into a wall. Got rid of all those. And now all of a sudden, now we have to build a wall. It's really aggravating, especially breaking laws and everything else where they made us toe the line on literally everything when all we were doing is closing a huge gap where people, thousands upon thousands of people a day were crossing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
But, okay, let me take this one step further here. I'm really going to aggravate you now. You and I share a unique experience up the chain in our family tree a little bit where we've lost valuable property to eminent domain seizures. They're talking about doing that to people to build this section of wall. Do you think that there's a chance? Because what they build on my family's land? Oh, yeah. Vandenberg Air Force Base. They put a couple of launch pads there and took over 16,000 acres from my family. And most of it is just blank now, except for Elon's toys and the Air Force's toys out there. You know, a couple landing strips, whatever. I don't think they're taking up the whole 16,000 prime coastal ranch real estate with one of the most beautiful beach breaks ever, by the way. But what do you think about that? Like, they're saying they might actually buy or eminent domain some of this land along these 20 miles. Do you think there might be something they're after in there, or maybe a gateway that they're trying to create, or just a means to funnel migrants out of a certain area or into a certain area? I mean, there's a lot that could be played with here.
Yeah, probably all of it. All of it. Right. And yeah. They don't care. And people, and we know because we approached a lot of these people when we were trying to find a section of wall to build. We went and talked to the people who own those ranches on the border. Right. And they've been in their family for generations upon generations. And now the government is just going to come in and be like, no, it's our land now. Hightail it out of here. Like that. It's wrong. It's wrong. Especially when it was tried to be done the right way.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reasoning too, my goodness. I mean, I think that most people out there, when they see this, they'll even like when I say most people, I'm kind of referring to your non-news hound, maybe, you know, Democrat leaning or independent, something like that. They're going to say, oh, well, you know, they're trying something. You know, we've got a lot of people here and some crime happening. So they're trying. They're trying to do their best. But it's really, I don't know. What do you think about that normie argument? Just no way.
No, right? That they've had the ability to shut down the border, right? They've had the ability to stop the flow. They've made it worse, right? They've invited people. They've given them an app to use, right? They've made it easier for them to come to this country illegally, right? So if they wanted to shut it down, they could, but they're refusing to shut it down. So I think the bigger question is, what are these people doing when they get here? Why are they here? Why are they all military-aged men, right? Where are they going? Who's paying for them? Right. And now they're like literal squatters in New York City in these luxury high rise hotels because they refuse to leave because they have nowhere else to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's really aggravating.
Yeah. Now, very interesting. And this happening on the same week where they're saying in Maui that they're going to be kicking people out of the hotels and making room for, you know, more FEMA employees and all this stuff. So, you know, if you had your house burned down in Maui, you got a few weeks at a hotel, tough luck. If you fly from Istanbul to Colombia and then hook a train, a migrant train all the way up to the United States through all those borders, hey, here's a cell phone, here's a monthly paycheck, here's a driver's license, have fun. We'll see you later or never. All right. Well, hey, Jennifer Lawrence, any final comments? I got to let you go in a moment here.
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, the people of Lahaina got $700 and migrants are getting, I think, $2,200 a month. So it really shows like how much the American government cares about, you know, actual Americans, not people who are here illegally.
There you go. Well said. Jennifer Lawrence, America Mission. Follow her and Dustin Stockton's work over there on X.com. We'll have you back on again real soon, Jennifer. Always enlightening and fun to have you here on the Brian McClain Show at TNT Radio.
You will go nowhere and be happy if you allow the Great Reset to rule your life. In France, they're well on their way.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
A new survey from Consumer Science and Analytics in France found 41% of the French population favors restricting everyone to only 4 airplane flights in their entire life. 4 in their entire life to fight against global warming. That number rises to 59% of 18 to 24-year-olds in France want to limit you to just 4 flights for your entire life to save the climate. Climate lockdowns aren't something that could, might, may happen. They are here, they are now. France has already banned 2.5-hour flights or less to save the climate, forcing people into cars and trains. An EU-wide proposal is looking at 6-hour or less flight bans to save the climate. The BBC is already saying that voluntary reductions can only go so far and are openly asking what a flying-free world would look like. You've been warned. They're saying the quiet part out loud. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
A Rasmussen Report survey of 1,000 likely U.S. voters conducted in March 2022 found 52% of voters thought it likely that cheating affected the outcome of the 2020 presidential election. 40% of voters thought that it was unlikely. Breaking this down further, 33% said cheating was very likely, 19% said somewhat likely, and 13% said somewhat unlikely, and 27% saying it was very unlikely. This contrasts with news media claiming there is no evidence of vote fraud. A broad range of people believed that there was significant vote fraud. Men, women, all age groups, whites and non-whites, Republicans, those who are neither Republicans nor Democrats, all income groups except those making over $200,000 per year, all educational groups except those who went to graduate school, and all job categories.
Deconstructing PSYOPs, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Brian McLean on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
You know, we've talked a little bit about this Newsweek publication that came out 2 days ago a little bit. Let me just read from the beginning of it here for a second. The federal government believes that the threat of violence and major civil disturbances around the 2024 U.S. presidential election is so great that it has quietly created a new category of extremists that it seeks to track and counter. Donald Trump's army of MAGA followers. Here to discuss this with me is David Whited from the Flyover Conservatives. David, thank you for joining me here on today's News Talk.
Hey, it's great to be here with you. Wish we were talking about things going great and booming and fuzzy kittens and great, happy things. But, you know, they're doesn't seem to be the case at the moment.
Yeah, you know, let me get your take on this, because I've been saying this for a while, and I think this is another week where I should bring it up. I look at things like this. This is just the latest in over a decade of things like this coming out. If you've, you know, been tracking these sort of, you know, little categories they make, little bulletins they put out, little trifolds, all this stuff. I mean, I remember back in the Ron Paul era, like 2012 or so, when they were saying if you wear hoodies and backpacks and pay for your coffee with cash, you might be a domestic terrorist.
Yeah.
It was almost comical back then, but now there's this weaponization of government attached to all these concepts. And I feel like they've broad brushed these things over all their releases over all these years to the point where if you are center left, if you're center right, if you're libertarian, if you're independent, if you're DGAF party, you're still subject to this group of people. All you have to be is not a psychotic NPC progressive liberal to fall into that category of MAGA followers. Am I being too broad there?
Well, you know, it starts with the very language when they create an us and a them category. And just back up and think of just for a moment about this, the idea of government. I mean, why do we even have government? Well, government's there to serve the needs of the people, to make sure we have a functioning society, that things are going well. They're there to you know, fill a role of protecting us from other governments and entities that would cause us harm from the outside in. They're there, you know, made up of elected officials theoretically to represent our voices, that they go there begrudgingly to serve for a couple of years. When I come back, though, you're going next time, because I got a farm to run, I got a business to run, I got kids. Yeah. Like, next time you're going to represent this community that we live in, you know, on a state level or on a federal level. And when they start using language that's an us and a them, you know, and they categorize chunks of the society, I think what put it on the map more than anything else is the term, you know, a basket of deplorables. You know, means like just there's a group of just disgusting, abhorrent individuals that are below us, and the language is more like of maybe a farmer that lives in a house and there's cattle out in the barn. You know, that's necessary. You have to have some cattle because that's what we're going to eat. But they're a different subspecies than us. They're there to serve us. They need to be in pens. You wouldn't bring the cattle to live in your house because they're below you. And it's that kind of language that creates this separation in our society. Of there's a group that actually thinks, and we use this word elites, and I think that just edifies them and continues to blow up their ego of that they are elites. And whether it's within America or the World Economic Forum category of people, the Klaus Schwab, the Yuval Noah Harari, and these people that refer to the less than them groups. And they look down on the people that at the end of the day, probably their hands are dirty. They own a heating air conditioning company and they got to take a shower at the end of the day. They look down on that group of people as being ignorant and below them. And whatever they can do to vilify the them version compared to the us, and them, you know, the us is them. Either they think that they are this category of people that are more intelligent, more valuable, a higher level of contribution. And it's because they don't really have the ability to leave their environment and compete. They probably don't grow a garden. They don't grow food. They don't produce. They don't get things done. They're there in an evolutionary standpoint, basically just to rule over those that can do those things. And so when there's a group of people that you fear in a lot of ways, you have to label them something as awful, because then once they're a subcategory, then they can do whatever they want to them. And then it's like, well, you know, they talk to them about that, but these are MAGA Republicans. These are these like deplorables. These are these awful, awful people that need to be living in pens away from our farmhouse. That's the language they use.
Well, I mean, they wear red baseball hats. I mean, who does that? Fred Durst? I mean, you know, obviously they're terrible people, terrible people. No, but seriously, you know, you talk about the elites, and I find it very interesting to, you know, when I come across one of these creatures, just first to recognize that it's not the same as you and I and anyone that we know, probably. These are people that have everything that they could possibly want, and so much free time and so much free money that they can focus on doing their best to become a good Bond villain. You know what I mean? Like, okay, sure. I can be Spectre, I can be Blofeld, but I find it interesting to look at where they came from and look, you know, back into the writings of the people that influenced them. You know, your Jacques Attalés of the world, or, you know, Carol Quigley. You know, it's interesting to read the apologists for these people, the biographies of these people, and look into the writings of some of the philosophical writings and political thinkings of the people that influenced them. And when you do that, it's just a few decades back, you'll find people that are pro-eugenics, pro-open borders, pro-weapons of mass migration, pro-experimenting on people, pro- all forms of authoritarianism, you know, and that's really what it feels like is happening right now, you know, because, and they want to polarize us against each other and say, oh, it's us and them, and those guys think we're Nazis, and those guys think we're commies, and clearly we're going to, you know, have to fight it out amongst ourselves, and whatever the, you know, 10 million people are that are here now, wherever they come from, how that comes into this is going to be fun to find out, I guess.
Yeah, and it does come down to the language, you know, that they use. And, you know, whether someone's, you know, loves Donald Trump or not, he uses this phrase, and I think it's pretty clever on his part, because it really represents the situation of this time of they're not after me, they're after you, I'm in the way. And he was championed by this crowd because he was one of them. He was an elite. He was the top of his game. He was on TV. He was, successful, had the jet, he was the rap songs talking. So when one of them stepped away from the crowd and says, "Hey, I stand for you," that did create a massive amount of loyalty. But if you look at it on a global scale, it's really, there's a section of globalists, and they're not after, they're after us, and America's in the way, kind of like Donald Trump says, he's in the way. America's in the way because of its principles and this pesky constitution and these ideas of individual personal responsibility that steps us away from, like, there's two groups of people. I mean, when you kind of look at this, there's a group that the government's their God. When they don't have something, they go to the government for it. The government's their source. The government is their answer to things. If you hurt my feelings, I can't deal with you, Brian. I've got to go to the government. I got to get someone else involved. I can't work this out with you. There's another group that already has a God. They already have a church that they go to. Their act of worship is in another category, and they have another source that they go to. And this isn't even a religious thing. It's a, where do you look to for your answers? Do you look to yourself and your hard work and what you could do and in your resilience and the strength of your spine and your pioneer spirit in a God, or is simply the government your answers for everything? And you look at that. And so it's these two groups of people. And if you don't look to the government as your source, if they're not the highest thing ever, then you're a problem. Because then you would dissent and you want to knock them off of their throne. And they do look at power and the clutch they have on it as a godlike, power and ability. And so you look at this Newsweek article labeling a section of our country that is growing by the minute in a very unique way because of the persecution of Donald Trump. You ever heard of Patrick Bet David, business guy, guy, his podcast,
right? Yeah.
Valuetainment guy. He made an example the other day. I was listening to one of his little clips, a reels. He said, if you're at a restaurant, you hear a couple, you could see on their faces that they're like fighting and they're having tough words at a restaurant. He said, if you look at them doing that, you might kind of think, oh, this, the guy's probably being a jerk and his wife's like upset and probably something he did. But if you get closer and you hear what she says and she's like, "You're a piece of garbage. My mother was right about you. I should have never," and just beaten this guy down. He's like, "Honey, I'm sorry. I'm working three jobs. I know I don't put enough time with you." It's like, "You're nothing. You're never going to." All of a sudden, when you hear her verbal abuse, all of a sudden your view shifts. You're like, "Oh, maybe he's not the best guy in the world, but apparently he's trying." And you sort of shift sides when you see how she's treating him. And I think there's a lot of people that are looking at this scenario, whether it's somebody in a red hat, it's a MAGA person, it's a Republican person, or if it's Donald Trump himself, there's a lot of people in our country that are like, "Ah, I was out on this, but he's being bullied. He's being attacked." And I think there's a segment of our country that says, "You know what? That's how I was treated by the judicial system. That's how I was treated by the government. That's how I'm treated by those in authority. Maybe I relate more to these people than I thought. Why are they consistently after a guy that's not committed a crime? There's no victim here, and he's being attacked in every single state, by the DOJ, and on a state level. We're like, maybe I need to reevaluate my attachment to this, and it's actually making the numbers of their crowd grow. They're not creating any sympathy. It's terrible marketing, really, on Merrick Garland and everybody that's kind of at the head of this, all the way to, Joe Biden and whoever's pulling his strings.
Yeah. No, it's really bad optics. It's terrible optics. And we saw that in 2016 to a certain extent. We saw it in 2020 to a big extent. 2022, you really started to see a lot of mm-hmm. our Latino Americans, our African Americans saying, I'm sick of this. I'm over this. I know what Patrice Cullors did with all that money. And that's a hustle. The people are recognizing it. So yeah, we've got about a minute left. Anything, any predictions or anything you want to say about upcoming 2024?
Well, for one, I hope that we get there, but I think there's a larger number of people that are participating in their local government than ever before. And I think ultimately, that is going to play a big role. Every day on the Flyover Conservative podcast, we're trying to bring on the best minds possible in each of these categories. I'm hopeful on a local level. I'm very discouraged on a national level. And hopefully those two will teeter-totter each other out towards justice long-term. But I'm glad we got people like you calling it out on a daily basis.
Hey, likewise, my friend. It's been great chatting with you. Flyover Conservatives, and where's the best place for people to find you? Where do you want them to land first?
Then go to flyoverconservatives.com. We tend to have the most freedom to speak our mind on Rumble in these days. And so check us out at rumble.com at Flyover Conservatives. And hopefully they'll like what they find.
All right, David Whited, thank you so much. Keep up the great work. And I'll look forward to speaking with you again right here on the Brian McClain Show at Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Stay tuned for the Misty Winston Show coming up next right here on TNT Radio.